Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first Hypertext AfriCast for 2019. My name is Brendan Lotzer, and joining me in studio, as always, is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Robin Chetty.
How's it going?
Good. And you guys, how was your festive season and the start to the new year?
Festive season wasn't long enough.
The break wasn't long enough.
I basically spent it doing busy work that I'd put off the rest of the year, and like, it was bad for me. I had a lot of stuff to do, car problems, school stuff. Yeah, I know it would have been worse if I was also working at the same time. So I mean,
count your blessings. Yeah, essentially, count your blessings, Clinton. Yeah. So who are we starting with today? Raise your hand. Robin. Okay, Robin. So you went to go and see a movie recently. What was it about? It was about turning sand into something.
Yeah, Glass.
Ha-ha! Bazinga! Anyway, Glass, yes. The M. Night Shyamalan sequel, I guess, to Unbreakable, is it?
Yeah, it's so his Avengers.
I don't know if you would frame it as a sequel or perhaps part of a trilogy.
Oh yes, because
Split.
Yeah, I forgot about Split.
So I guess before we kind of delve into like I felt about the movie, let's just talk about kind of what happens here. So Shyamalan did Unbroken, which was a great movie that I really enjoyed.
Unbreakable. Isn't the movie called Unbreakable?
I think it was called Unbreakable. Yeah.
Didn't I say Unbreakable?
No, you said Unbroken,
which I think is another movie.
Yeah, that's the movie with that guy in World War One. I think it was. Anyway,
I don't know. Anyway,
Unbreakable. Bruce Willis and his. Kind of this reluctant hero that kind of discovers these powers that he has. And that was a really cool story. I really enjoyed the dynamic between himself and the bad guy that was played by Samuel L. Jackson. And then, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
I think it was about 2 years ago.
2 years ago, there was another Shyamalan movie called Split. And it had James McAvoy, who played this guy that suffered with schizophrenia and had multiple personalities. And would kidnap young girls, and it eventually turns out that he's got like, I believe it's 11 different personalities inside of himself, and it's referred to as the Horde.
Mm.
And at the end credits of that film, we enter a diner, and at the end of the diner, we see Bruce Willis's character from Unbreakable.
Yeah.
And then obviously the internet went crazy, and fanboys said, yes, there's going to be some kind of mashup, or there's like a Shyamalan universe.
The MKSEU. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so then I guess Glass is a continuation of that. And the kind of. So I guess like the main kind of focus here is Samuel L. Jackson's character, who is. Suffers from a rare kind of bone density disease, and essentially almost any above average contact will shatter his bones.
Mm.
And then he got the nickname Mr. Glass, and he kind of embraces that as he becomes like almost a villain.
First name Mr. Last name Glass.
So what I enjoyed about Unbreakable initially was that it was one of those real, I don't want to say real, it was one of those M. Night Shyamalan movies where you were always guessing. You didn't know what was going on. And then I think it was only towards the end you found out that Samuel L. Jackson was like the bad guy.
Yeah, it was a great twist.
Yeah, it was a great, great twist.
What a twist. Flipping robot chicken.
And then there was, then Split came out, which I thought was, it was okay. I wasn't really like, oh my, what an excellent movie. And then there was this announcement, or like you said, there was the end credit scene, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. How is this related? Also, why are you bringing up a movie from, like, when was Unbreakable released?
19 years ago.
So why? Okay, exactly. Why?
Well, that's kind of one of my big issues with the film. I like the fact that they kind of wanted to connect these universes, but they just don't meld together for me. After I watched Glass, I went to watch Unbreakable again.
Mm.
And the styles are so contrasting. It just for me, it doesn't make sense that these two characters would exist. Well, these three characters would exist in the same world.
Yeah.
So that was a real big issue for me. And a lot of times things really seemed like forced.
Yeah.
And yeah, the whole kind of comic book narrative that kind of behind it was interesting in parts.
Yeah.
And Samuel Jackson is a very good antagonist once again.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it just seems like Shyamalan kind of got caught up in all like this, you know, Hollywood studio execs
ideas yeah.
of making everything into a universe.
Yeah.
And for me, it just
doesn't work.
A few good points I would say as well. There's introduction of a psychiatrist. So
she's the one you see in the beginning of the trailer.
I don't give too much away, but essentially all three of these characters are now institutionalized, and a psychiatrist is given 2 or 3 days to kind of assess them and convince of the fact that they're actually suffering from psychological delusions.
Okay.
And don't have the superpowers that they believe that they have.
I have to ask you, how did they put any of them in jail in this thing? Because they do have like legitimate superpowers. It's not... Well, I don't know. Maybe the twist in the movie is that it's all in their heads. Don't tell me that's the flippin'... Okay, I haven't seen the movie, so that's just a guess. But the one guy in the trailer is like bending steel, and then you see him sitting there... like in incarceration, basically. It doesn't make sense. Do they explain that? Did he go willingly or something like that?
So the psychiatrist and this facility, they've done extensive research on each of the characters. For the most part, Samuel L. Jackson's Mr. Glass is in a wheelchair. So
yeah, him I can understand.
So he's quite easy to... Well, they think he's quite easy to just control.
Yeah.
The Horde, which is James McAvoy's multiple personalities, they use... a sequence of strobing lights to trigger different personalities, so they ensure that the beast, which is like the one where he kind of morphs into,
the dude that can run on walls,
he hulks out basically.
Yeah. They kind of ensure that he's kind of taken care of in that way.
Okay.
And then Bruce Willis's character, if you remember from Unbreakable, he was vulnerable to water.
Yeah.
So they have his kind of room set up with a whole bunch of high pressure hoses.
Oh wow.
So. This, I don't think this gives away the plot because the clips of it online already. But in the opening like stanza of the film, Bruce Willis's character, and who's kind of referred to as the Overseer.
Okay.
His name in the movie is David Dunn, but kind of online he's referred to as the Overseer.
Yeah. Okay.
His character and the beast duke it out.
Okay.
Their fight ends up in the street, but then a whole bunch of police show up, and they use the strobe lights to knock out the beast. And David Dunn doesn't want to cause a problem, so he says, okay, I'll go in wheeling me into this.
Wow, okay.
So that's kind of how they got all three of them together.
That kind of sounds like the part in the comic books where like the Grey Hulk fights the Green Hulk inside of Bruce Banner's mind. Sounds very familiar. Yeah, well, I'm sure it takes a lot of other stuff from other famous comics. Yeah,
just like kind of like Unbreakable, they're leaning heavily into like the comic book lore.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the plot kind of sequences are built around how Mr. Glass views everything in like almost like a comic book lens.
Okay.
And kind of how he explains things. So one of the also nice aspects of the film was the fact that the beast and like the Horde and all those multiple personalities, although they might seem like being the bad guy, and also Mr. Glass kind of seems like the bad guy.
Yeah.
Neither of them actually kind of when the film ends, they don't really aren't really the bad guys. There's a big twist at the end. I don't want to give it away.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there are bits and pieces that kind of remind me of when like Shyamalan was at his prime.
Yeah.
But there aren't enough to
before I would say before Devil.
I would say the last good one that I watched was probably The Village.
Isn't that the first one?
No. Because it was Signs, then it was The Village.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then The Village, and then, it just...
Then it just started, what's happening, M. Night?
Because I've not watched a lot of his movies. I don't think I've actually sat down to watch a full one through, because when I was growing up, it was just accepted that he is kind of a joke, and his movies were always like, oh, what a twist. So because of his... it might be different for you guys, but the reputation... when I was like watching movies and then things, just like avoid his stuff. So I've never really given him a chance. I think I did watch Split like all the way through. And then like Brendan said, I wasn't really impressed. So when they announced he was doing this trilogy, this universe thing, I really didn't pay it any mind. So I don't know. It's just weird. And it seems like people are like, oh, we'll give M. Night one more chance. And then the movie comes out and they're like,
It's kind of got that vibe to it. I think.
Did he not do The Happening?
No.
The Happening was Amazon.
What? Oh, was it?
Oh, no. Because I also sat down to watch that not knowing anything about it. See, the thing about The Happening...
Most of that movie was Mark Wahlberg's, but that was some...
That was his fault. I blame Mark Wahlberg 100% for The Happening. I
actually really liked the idea of The Happening.
Yes, the idea was amazing, but Mark Wahlberg just ruined it.
Mark Wahlberg of one of the flippin' Transformers movies. Not to mention, I don't know if... Okay, this is going off a tangent, but Mark Wahlberg is a terrible human being. If you guys read about what he did in his youth, like putting aside the drug stuff, like racism, beat a man into blindness, that's a whole thing. You guys can Google that in your own time. But The Happening is the one which kind of also killed it for me, where it was like, oh, this is interesting.
So,
never mind.
When I was growing up, M. Night Shyamalan movies were always known for having a twist at the end. I mean, there was Sixth Sense.
Like legitimately good ones.
Yeah, really good twists. Like this, I still love The Sixth Sense as a film. And looking back at it and going, oh, he showed us the whole time what was happening in that movie. Signs was like similar in a sense that I didn't know what was happening, how it was going to turn out. And it was really satisfying, the conclusion to that movie. The Village as well. Like there were certain things there that kind of I felt satisfied after watching those movies. Is that the case here with Glass?
I wouldn't say you get satisfied after. I think purely because there's not one kind of central character that the audience kind of attaches to. Like mm-hmm. in Unbreakable, it was kind of, to an extent, Bruce Willis and his son.
Yeah.
Like that duo, you kind of, you wanted them to kind of, you know, make it.
Yeah.
With The Village, it was Bryce Dallas Howard's character. You wanted her, the blind girl. You wanted her to make it.
Yeah.
So for me, that kind of element is missing from this film.
And okay.
I think, yeah, it's one of those cases where you really wanted M. Night to kind of hit it out the park, and it's just possible. It's barely possible.
Oh, God damn.
So, also, one of the things I don't like about this film is the fact that it opens up opportunities to have more films in this universe that he's
made. Oh, no.
Which I'm not a fan of. The Stop. Reason I liked Unbreakable is because it was like a complete story in and of itself.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, like, for Unbreakable, I remember it kind of being final. I didn't see there being a need for a sequel, and now we've sort of, or a trilogy even, because apparently Split was a sequel to Unbreakable, I guess.
And that kind of begs the question, okay, are all Shyamalan movies not connected? Because how the hell is Bruce Willis?
I'm sure someone's made a blog
somebody
post.
On the somebody on the internet has gone and made the M. Night Shyamalan universe.
And there's like
all
a
connected.
Timeline and everything.
Yeah, like so the Pixar universe.
I think just to end, if you're a fan of Unbreakable and you're hoping that this film is in the same vein, you're out of luck. If you're a fan of Split, and you know, good luck to you if you're a fan of Split, then yeah, this kind of film has a similar vein to that. But for me, it lacks the really great elements that Shyamalan kind of had in his early parts of his career. So for me, it kind of falls flat.
Oh, well. Shame. Don't make any more movies in this universe, please, Shyamalan. Just move along, okay?
Score out of 10, Robin? No half marks, only 4.
I'll give it 5.5 out of 10.
No, I just said no half marks. What?
We'll round up.
So 5 or 6?
5 out of 10. The half I gave was purely because of the fact that the kid...
Yeah.
Appears in Unbreakable, his kid.
Okay.
Also appears in this one, which is a nice little nod. There are nice several nods to Unbreakable, which is quite cool. But yeah.
Cool.
Then I have to give it a 5 out of 10. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Rather spend your money on something else then.
Yeah, well, the thing is, there aren't really that many nice movies coming out
in January. So, yeah. So stay at home. Might get a Netflix subscription instead.
The Punisher is this weekend. I'm literally not doing anything else. I think I'm going to binge that whole... I hope it comes out early on like Friday local time. Anyway, I'm going to do my own segue, Brendan.
Oh, that's fine.
Because
I can chill, kick back.
My God, I had to integrate with the South African government over the last few weeks trying to renew my driver's license. Oh boy. So I've never done this before.
Let me just say, I've done this 3 times in the past 3 years because I've lost my license 3 times.
I forgot you got your thing taken. Yeah.
So I'm kind of au fait with this. So when you said that you've had endless problems, I was shocked.
So Brendan filled me with false hope because I think it's been like a month and a half, I got a letter in the mail basically a reminder that my driver's license was about to expire on the 9th of January.
Mm-hmm.
I got this in the middle of December, which, you know, isn't the best time because, yeah. So first of all, from talking to people, I'm very lucky I got this letter reminding me, because a lot of people just, their license expires and it's up to them to catch it. So that's the first thing. Next thing is, Brendan followed me up with soap because I went on the company chat and I was like, hey guys, I've never done this before. Does anyone have any like tips for me or anything? And Brendan's like, oh, you just go. They do it. It's all good.
Yeah.
So I kind of shortened the story because it involves me going to many different licensing departments very early in the morning and lining up and then realizing that the line is so long that I can't be there because I'll miss the whole workday.
Yeah.
So I'm going to skip all those times I did that and get to the real point, which is this. As far as I know, in Gauteng, I don't know about other provinces, you cannot renew your license by just going to a licensing department, standing in line and being served. They will not help you if you don't have a booking. How do you make a booking? Online only. Now, I'm sure anyone listening to a podcast has at least an internet connection with a decent cap, but for a lot of people, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Either data is expensive, and trying to doing this on your phone is really difficult, by the way, but data is expensive, and if you don't have a good connection, you're out of luck. You need to make a plan to get on the internet and make a booking.
So we must say this is explicitly for renewals, correct?
Yes, driver's license renewals. Yes. Although on the site they have other stuff like learners and other stuff like that. So I think this applies to other driving stuff.
So the reason I have had such an easy time is because for the most part it's just been a replacement.
Yeah, I think that's just different.
Yeah, I've literally gone into the licensing department and said, my license was stolen. Okay, here's what you need to do. We need this, pay them, do the eye test, done.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's the thing. Like, when was the last time you did that? It was middle of last year, right?
Yeah.
What if things have changed since then?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because Robin actually said to me, are you sure you have to book? Because you said you renewed it last year.
February last year.
But I found a news article in, I think, October or September saying it's changed and you need to book.
This is really something that they should let a lot more people know about.
Yeah, because it's only, like if you Google now, you'll find like blog posts and stuff, but it's not common knowledge yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? The common knowledge is you go wait in the line until you get served.
Yes.
You know, like take a half day off work, take a full day. So that's the first thing. You need to book online. The next thing is, you have to just hope that there's a licensing center somewhere near you. I had to drive 90 minutes to Roodepoort to do it.
Oh my gosh.
That was my only choice. My choices were drive to Roodepoort because from all the waste of time running up and down and then finding out they won't serve me, I was getting to the point where my license was going to expire.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I'll get to now. It's different if your license does expire because they can still help you, but you need a temporary. That's a whole other thing. So I got to the point where there was a booking one day late in December for me to go to Roodepoort. It was either that or my license expires. So I had to go to Roodepoort. I still had to wait in line, but the line wasn't that long.
Yeah.
I got helped. There was a whole thing with my eye test I won't get into. That was a problem for me. But what I will suggest is, they do require you to do an eye test, but I suggest you go to an optometrist and get it done there.
Sorry, can I just say something about that point?
Yeah.
I did that for my my renewal last year.
Yeah.
And they did not accept my
What?
So, okay. So here's the thing.
And then when I did the whole kind of put your forehead forward.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Tell me where the light's coming from. The guy said, no, you're blind.
What?
What? No, it's not possible. I wanted to film you right there and then I had to read it. So it's just...
So that's why I was saying you want to avoid problems like that. So here's why, when you went to your optometrist, did they give you, I remember it fondly, it's a purple and silver form. And they didn't accept it. Okay. So that's the problem with these things. We can go and we can have our experience and we can try right at how to guide, but then when you go, they might just screw you over and say things have changed.
Well, so for instance, right, the licensing department in Krugersdorp, which is the one that I use because I stay on the West Rand, they no longer accept cash, but last year
they only accepted cash, and that's the general right knowledge right now.
Yep.
Only take cash.
But because of there was a robbery there in December, they've now changed the rules, and no longer accept cash at all. But the problem is that I only learned about this like 3 weeks after the decision was made, because I happened to be on Facebook and somebody shared it.
Yeah. Like, a lot of the times you learn important information while you're there, and then you just fail the process because you don't have the right stuff or whatever. Anyway, so despite Robin's problems, I still suggest going to the optometrist, because maybe your eyesight has degraded and you need glasses, or it's just a good backup.
Yeah,
like if it happens with Robin. And also some optometrists won't even charge you. I was speaking to a lady in the line. She said it took her 5 minutes and the optometrist didn't charge her a cent. Sometimes it'll be $50 or whatever. I think you should do it. So you do the eye test. You give them some information. At this point, they sometimes take an ID picture. Mm. You need to bring one with you.
Yeah.
My application didn't for some reason. What? But again, we're going to suggest, and the department does suggest, you bring 3 ID-sized black and white photos.
Yeah.
So
don't do them. They're not color. They don't have to be color.
They can't be.
I think they specifically ask for black.
Oh, it's your ID that is colored. Never mind.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So you do that. You have to present your ID. You have to present your old license.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully everything goes smoothly from there. You have to go pay. When I did it, it was 228 Rand cash only. I got to the front of the counter and the woman says, "Do you know it's cash only?" It's like, "Yes, I'm holding my wallet to give you cash. I know." So it's cash only. They give you a slip. Now, here's the thing, right? That piece of paper, it's just a regular A4 piece of paper, is very important, because I have to carry that around when I drive, and when I get asked to show my license, I have to give my license and that piece of paper, because at this point my license has now expired.
Mm-hmm.
That piece of paper is my proof that I've renewed it and I'm just waiting to get the physical card. Now, there's something you need to know about that piece of paper. On the back, it has an affidavit that you can fill out. And the affidavit basically says that if you can't collect your license, you can give it to someone else and they can collect it on your behalf, which is going to be important for me, because I might need to send a courier to Rudaipur to work, because, again, it's an hour and a half away. So a lot of people don't know that on the back of the thing, it has an affidavit just printed there for you. And some people might not know you need
Pro
that.
Pro tip.
Yeah,
that's a really good tip.
So just if you made it this far, I'm going to put this all in writing just for reference, so you don't need to scrub through a podcast when you need to know this information. Let's talk temporary licenses real quick. So what happened with me is that I applied before my license expired, and while I'm waiting for my card, the license expired. That means I can still drive, but I need that piece of paper and my license, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the department has given me that piece of paper, grants me 3 months to drive around with the piece of paper and the license. Uh-huh. Now, I don't know what's going to happen if they don't have my new license repaired before the 3 months runs out. I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But theoretically, not theoretically, it does 100% give you 3 months from the date of expiring on your license. If it's expired, you still have to make a booking to renew your license, and you do this whole process as normal.
Yeah.
But while you're there, you also need to get a temporary license.
Yes.
As far as what I know, a temporary license would cost 78 Rand to get.
And it lasts for 6 months, I believe.
I don't know. They couldn't tell.
I've had one before, and it lasted for 6 months.
Okay. So that's the thing. Some people, myself included, thought that because it expired, I needed that temporary license, but you don't. It's very important to know that you have that 3-month quote-unquote grace period.
So my question is, because I've had this issue before, where somebody had rented a vehicle on my behalf, and I went to go collect it, right? But now my license—
sorry, you went to go collect the vehicle or
the vehicle license? The vehicle. Oh, okay. Right, my license had been stolen a month prior. I was waiting for replacements. I had the form from
that
them
that shows you're going to get
that
it.
That I was going to get it, and the rental company refused to give me the vehicle.
So that's a thing where it's like a third party, and they can make their own rules.
Okay, fair enough.
So that's just probably in their business books.
Probably. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's different. Renewal and replacement are very different things. The other thing I need to mention is, I don't know if this is still going on, But apparently there's big delays in South Africa about the actual printing of the physical licenses.
Yeah, I saw reports.
A month or so ago, that was in the news. I don't know if it's still going on, but it's something you need to keep in mind. But the big takeaways are here. You cannot just go to the licensing department. You need to book online. They will refuse. Don't do what I did.
This is specifically in Gauteng, though.
Yeah, I stood in line in the rain. I'm not joking. I got to the front of the line. They told me to go home, like very bluntly. Please don't do that. Save some time where I wasted mine. The address is, you can't click a link that I'm telling to you over the airways. Yeah. It's online.natis.gov.za. Natis is NATIS. I really suggest you do that. And for everyone listening who's like, oh, I don't need that yet, look on your license. You might need it. Because a lot of people don't have the pleasure that I did, that I got that letter in the mail. So yeah, I have a full guide to do that. It'd basically be this list of tips, but in written form, so people have it for reference. I already have a guide to booking online because it is relatively straightforward, but it has some, you know, problems, as everything in South Africa does. And sometimes the website won't work. And if you do have some time before, like a few months before yours expires, and you go to book and there's no center near you with an opening, don't panic. Just reload it and come back the next day and just try that for a few weeks, because it actually does get updated. And you should check back every day. There might be one close to you. There might be one 20 minutes. Just try get one that is an hour and a half away. And that's it. Yeah, it's
stressful.
I'm waiting right now. If nothing goes wrong, I should any day now get a call or an email or an SMS saying it's ready for me to pick up, and I'll pick it up. Oh, and another thing. There is, after you've done this, you can then SMS your number. Your ID number to a certain number, which I'll tell you now, and this will give you an update on where your
process.
ID is.
Okay.
So you SMS your ID number to 33214, and it should tell you. I'm going to do that right now while Brendan tells us about what he's talking about.
Right.
Ooh, the segue.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
If I could... let me not do that. So we're going to look at gaming. In 2018, a firm by the name of Superdata, who was acquired by Nielsen last year, released the digital game summary, the 2018 year in review for digital games and interactive media. I'm not going to go through the whole report. Yeah, it does. Absolutely. I'm not going to go through everything. There'll be a link at the bottom of this post where you can find the story, which also contains a link to the full dot. We'll have a link where you can download this report. But one of the big takeaways from the report from me is about digital games. So this is encompassing digital sales of games. No physical sales, only digital. And the biggest platform in 2018 in terms of revenue was mobile, with estimated $61.3 billion in revenue, compared to PC, which brought in $35.7 billion, and console, which only brought in $12.7 billion. So this is in terms of revenue.
Before you dive into the numbers,
yeah.
Surely mobile lends itself to digital anyway. As opposed to the other platform.
Fair enough. I mean, okay, so I would also argue that for PC more and more. I feel like a lot of, especially here in South Africa, I can't speak for the rest of the world, but especially here in South Africa, I feel like physical sales just don't even happen anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I walked into a BT Games the other day and I was looking for... I can't even remember what it was. It escapes me, but they didn't have the game. Oh, it was Assassin's Creed Odyssey on PC, and that BT Games didn't have it. I don't know why. They just didn't have it. So, oh well, okay. And I think that for PC, I think for console, there's still a market for physical sales because you don't have to download a 45 gig game.
Most of the time. Sometimes you do.
Yeah.
Even though you have the disc.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know if you'll get to it, but the big reason physical is still popular for consoles is trade-ins,
yes,
and second hands.
Yeah. So in terms of, I can understand why digital is lower for console, but let's just get into some of these figures very quickly. In terms of the share of games, free-to-play titles earned 80% of all digital game revenues in 2018, with Asia taking the lion's share of the 87.7 billion dollar free-to-play market.
I think it's worth noting that I think because we're, I hate to use the term, but core gamers, where we play that section of games, right? When we hear free-to-play, we usually think like MMOs, like Warframe or whatever.
Yeah.
But you have to remember that, like you just said, mobile makes up the biggest percent here, and most of the games on mobile are free with microtransactions.
Absolutely.
So that's why, so when you think free-to-play is this huge, thriving economy, don't think of Warframe and similar big budget, quote-unquote, big budget games where, you know, you get a lot just for going in. Think of Candy Crush.
So we'll get to the top free-to-play games in 2018 in just a second. There's a point here. Sales of console franchises like Call of Duty and FIFA continue shifting away from physical discs and toward digital downloads. Now, I understand that for Call of Duty and FIFA, because those are games that you could then trade in the next year for when the next one comes in. These are yearly seasonal releases. But I don't know so much about games like, I don't know, like Spider-Man. You know, is that a game that people would want to keep afterwards? I don't know. But it's interesting to see how digital is becoming so much bigger in console. But then let's move on to free-to-play titles. And of course, the biggest free-to-play title in 2018 was...
Pokemon Go.
No, Fortnite. Come on.
Oh, see, that's my core gamer mentality. I forget that game's on mobile sometimes.
So it was the biggest earner by a long shot. It earned $2.4 billion. This is once again just digital stuff. So $2.4 billion
revenue, right?
Yes, that's revenue.
Income from
Okay,
because that's different from profit.
In second place is Dungeon Fighter Online, which only brought in $1.5 billion. Only. Yeah,
how are they making it through the year?
Then bizarrely, I say bizarrely, but for me this was really strange, was League of Legends was the third biggest with $1.4 billion, which is interesting because these, you'll see now, most of these are online games, mobile games. Then we had Crossfire, which I think
it's like a Chinese FPS, if I'm remembering.
Well, it says shooter.
Was Crossfire that?
I thought
was that. No. I'm sorry.
That's the Twisted Metal one or something, isn't
that's
it?
That's Cross Out.
I was also thinking of that.
Yeah, you're thinking of exactly the same game. That's Cross Out.
Pokemon Go was still big with $1.3 billion in revenue. But then we start getting into the real mobile stuff. So we have Honor of Kings, which is Tencent's game, $1.3 billion. Candy Crush Saga, which is Activision Blizzard. I don't know that Activision Blizzard published that game. Anyway, that brought in $1.1 billion. Monster Strike, $1 billion. Clash Royale, $900,000. I think. No, $900 million. My mistake. Because it's $0.9 billion.
No, I know, but flipping hell.
Didn't even reach a billion.
Yeah.
Jeez, what losers.
So, and mobile is just set to grow. And also, premium games are kind of declining, although they are not going anywhere just yet. So don't think that, because mobile is growing, people are going to start abandoning like your regular games. That having been said, though, they are earning less than the free-to-play stuff. So PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds only brought in it's a billion. They brought in $1 billion US dollars. FIFA only brought in $790 million. This is all, once again, digital revenue. So I would assume that accounts for your microtransactions that happen in the game and that sort of stuff. And then the only one that I see here Red Dead does have microtransactions, though, correct? In the multiplayer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, yeah. Most of these games all have microtransactions or a loot box of some form. Overwatch, Tom Clancy, Call of Duty, twice, Black Ops 4, and World War 2. and FIFA 19 and PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. But what interests me about this is everybody that shot back at Blizzard last year when they announced Diablo Immortal. I understand people were upset about the fact that there is that Diablo Immortal was a thing and we didn't get a proper Diablo or in quotation marks proper Diablo game. But
look at the numbers.
Look at the numbers and tell me that Activision Blizzard does not want to make money.
Yeah, people. I think a lot of people look at games like, oh, it's art, and while they are, the majority of games being made aren't made for art's sake. They aren't being made because someone has a vision for something and they want to share it with the world. They're made for profit.
Yeah.
It was a money-making operation.
I mean, like, and I'm not saying that, like, I'm sure, and Clinton is not saying either, that there aren't games out there that are made as a passion project, as a piece of art, as something to be experienced, and that's it. I mean, I think God of War is one of those games from last year. Spider-Man was one of those games for me. Detroit.
Here's the thing, right? When the critics come around and they have the, you know, best of the year things, and they have awards and everything, it doesn't always mean they made the most money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you're an investor or a CEO or a CFO, you don't really give a damn.
Yeah, you just care about how much did
our
profits increase.
You care about your pocketbook.
Yeah.
And you care about your yacht.
And I completely understand that. And it makes sense for Blizzard to then go and say, okay, well, Diablo Immortal is something that we need to make. Whether it's something that the fans enjoy, it's neither here nor there, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about, at the end of the day, it's, okay, we've made, you have World of Warcraft, you have Overwatch, you have Call of Duty, but we also want to tap into this mobile market, which I don't think Blizzard is at all, other than Candy Crush, apparently. But beyond that, I think that something like Diablo Immortal might actually sit rather well, especially with like fans in China, which is the biggest market for these free-to-play games.
Why do you reckon that's the case? Would it have anything to do with like censorship in the region?
It's a whole mixed bag, dude. That's a kettle of fish, dude. There's lots of reasons. There was console bans. There's limitations on PC gaming. The fact that the physical devices are so widespread. There's a lot of reasons. Sorry, I was just watching something about that last night.
That's perfectly fine. So Asia is the biggest free-to-play revenue contributor in the world. In terms of mobile gaming, Superdot didn't really share in terms of where the biggest concentration is. But, I mean, free-to-play, that's going with the mobile titles. Obviously, Diablo Immortal is not going to be a free-to-play. Actually, we don't know. I'm sure that it will fetch a premium price, though. Then, just to touch on some other interesting numbers here, gaming video content, which comprises like YouTube videos, Twitch streams, and other media, hit 850 million unique viewers in 2018 and earned $5.2 billion. Right? That's a lot of money. Who do you think the top earner was, guys?
Okay, so that's weird to me because
Ninja, I'm guessing.
Well, it doesn't. No, I spoke incorrectly. I'm talking the most watched Twitch channels of 2018.
It's probably some foreign language person we've never heard.
No, Twitch was definitely a Ninja. 218 million hours watched.
I'm not seeing enough movement.
Got to get those numbers up.
No.
Rookie numbers. Riot Games came in second with 95 million, but that makes sense because they host the Worlds, the League of Legends World Championship. So a lot of people there. Then you have Shroud with 86 million, who plays Counter-Strike Offensive. The Overwatch League, once again,
so
very official.
Twitch. Gaming Twitch people, not like IRL people.
These are all gamers.
Okay, because I'm sure,
But okay, so what interests me the most out of all of this, the number 10 person, do you guys know who Tyler is?
Just Tyler?
Or Tyler from League of Legends?
Nope.
No.
Okay, so he raged. He was a really toxic League of Legends player that got banned. And then last year, Riot allowed him back into the game. And he became the 10th most watched Twitch streamer in 2018, which I thought was really funny.
Did he continue to rage?
Yes, he of course, because he's a terror. I don't like him. It's just I don't want to speak badly of him because I don't want to get raged at him. All right,
kindergarten teacher.
But yeah, most of the guys are streaming like Fortnite stuff, as you might imagine. And yeah, so mobile gaming pretty big. Video content is growing, and then also I wanted to know from you guys: do you guys watch Twitch at all?
Well, I know you're probably going to mention this, Brendan, but that's kind of impossible sometimes.
Well,
because Twitch just doesn't work when you click play sometimes.
So this is quite interesting, right? So my connection to Twitch has gotten a lot better recently. And that's because the SAX cable that connects Africa to South America went live last year in September. And a number of local ISPs have started funneling traffic that way. So if you watch Twitch, you now get a similar experience if you were to watch a YouTube video or YouTube stream.
So
the buffering is really, really good. And like I'm able to watch Twitch streams without any hassle at all.
So as far as I know, YouTube does have servers in the country.
Yeah.
Right? Like we
well,
do.
Well, I mean, not. I don't think it's like a YouTube server, but they do have points of presence here. Okay. Google has points of presence in Africa. Yeah, I think
that's why. So YouTube for me has always been phenomenal. You know, we give YouTube a lot of flack for a lot of justifiable reasons. I mean, there was just news that they claimed it. They helped Disney claim a fan film. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. But in their defense, they've always been, as far as I can tell, just the most reliable streaming service of any kind. If you want to watch any kind of video, it just works. You click play and it works.
I would even go so far as to say that my experience on YouTube is often better than the experience I have on Netflix.
No, I'm including them. I'm including any kind of online internet video. In my opinion, YouTube's always been the fastest with the highest quality. Maybe someone say, oh, but when you go to 4K and you have lots of confetti on the screen, there's compression or whatever. But in terms of just sitting down and watching a video, it's been the best. And you can't compare that to when I went to Twitch and I want to load like a clip that's 10 seconds and I click play and nothing happens and nothing happens. I go to another tab and, it plays for 2 seconds and then buffers again.
I would say just keep an eye out on it. Like, especially like Euclid's and I used to have this same experience with Twitch. I would click play and it wouldn't load. And then if it did load, I had about 4 pixels on screen that just shifted colors. But I would say if you have had a bad experience with Twitch, maybe go back and see if your ISP is now routing. I don't know at this point whether there's any way to tell, short of calling every single ISP in the country and asking them, hey, are you connecting to South America now? But just keep an eye on it. Check, like go to a Twitch stream, see if you can watch something, and maybe you'll be pleasantly surprised. But yeah, I think that's going to wrap us for this week, the first podcast of 2019. I didn't say 2018.
Yes. Well done, Brendan. Yes.
That's going to do it for today. My name is Brendan Lotz. Thanks for listening. And from Clinton Matos.
See you, everybody.
And from Robin Chazy.
Cheerio.
We'll see you all next week. Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.